welcome to W Rated, the show where we willingly watch the world's worst rated movies. Today, you've joined us on this year's Road to Razzies, our annual season of episodes looking at the nominations for the controversial Golden Raspberry Awards 2024. For new listeners, I'm Daisy, and as always, I'm joined by podcast co-creator, host and editor Claire. Claire, would you like to tell us which film we're talking about this episode?
Today we are talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which is nominated for two supporting actor noms for both Michael Douglas and Bill Murray, also for Worst Prequel, Remake, Ripoff or Sequel, and for Worst Director for Peyton Reed, who also directed, I believe, the previous two installments. And in my brain, I'm really confused because I definitely thought this was the fourth in the franchise, but it is only the third.
No, it is only the third. I'm just looking up Ant-Man and the Wasp now, actually, because I'll be completely honest with you. I don't remember that film.
They've got the woman in the white suit who keeps, like, buzzing.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's about it, though. So, yeah, in the last film, Scott Lang's house arrest is just about to be finished. Puts his freedom at risk by helping Hope and Hank dive into the quantum realm, try to accomplish against time and any chance of success a very dangerous rescue mission. Oh, because the mom was in the quantum realm.
Yeah. Yes.
Gotcha. Up to speed. So that leaves us with Quantumania.
Yeah.
Did you see this one in the cinema?
I did see this one in the cinema. I love the Ant-Man films. I'm a very Marvel girly. I love... I forgot his name now, that's how much I love him. Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd is just... I worship at the altar of Paul Rudd.
We all do, and we all want his youthful glow. I quite like Catherine Newton. I feel like she's a very interesting up-and-coming young actress. I hope to see good things from her. So I was excited when I heard she was being cast as his daughter Cassie. Sad for the original girl, but it made sense because there was a time jump. And I really like Peyton Reed. I think I've said it before, Peyton Reed actually, statistically, is one of my preferred directors. I think of all, up until this, I don't think I'd ever seen a film of his I didn't enjoy. But here we are.
I did not know that he did these other films. I really like The Breakup. Okay, no one come at me with pitchforks, but I can't say for sure that I've ever seen Bring It On all the way through.
I think you've told me this numerous times and I get annoyed every time.
Yeah. Yes Man, I've seen.
I loved Yes Man. That was my like comfort movie at uni for some reason. Don't know why.
Is it Zooey Deschanel as well as Jim Carrey?
Yeah, weird age gap. Inappropriate age gap.
Do you know what? I was actually going to watch Bring It On last night, but I was like, no, because I was trying to find a film to fall asleep to. So
I know you watched Mean Girls instead, so I'll allow it because Mean Girls is better than Bring It On, but only slightly.
I will watch it eventually. But I did. That's a very different kettle of fish to Ant-Man in some ways. The original Ant-Man, really what sold it so much was the comedy.
Yeah. And Ant-Man and the Wasp kind of towed the line of that, had some comedy, but then it went a bit more serious, it went a bit more Marvel-y, because I think they took a bit of a risk on Ant-Man and thought, let's give it a go. And then we get to Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which follows up after Infinity War and Endgame, where Scott saves the world and figures out time travel, and he really comes good and everyone knows who he is now and he's wonderful and brilliant and all of these lovely things. And unfortunately, I feel like Peyton, and I don't know who the screenwriter was actually, because that's my issue here, realistically. Who wrote this script? It was written by Jeff Loveless, who... It was his first, it's his only writing credit. And he was supposed to be writing the, at least according to Letterboxd. And he is supposed to be writing The Kang Dynasty, which I don't know what's going on there and don't care to really get into it too much right now. But he clearly hadn't watched the first two Ant-Man films and clearly isn't one for humour. And we didn't get Louis. We didn't get his fast-talking sidekick who could have summed up everything we missed in the previous episodes. I want his description of what happened during the blip. I'm still so angry we didn't get that.
I want his description of the first nine Fast and Furious films.
Oh, my God. That I would sit through. Yeah. This film, I think, is the reason, not to say, not to be, like, cliche and punny, but the reason I like Ant-Man is because it's a much smaller story.
It's
very ground level, very small, very intimate. Like, I know it's like an origin story, but I love a good origin story. I don't care.
It's not an origin story in the same way that we've seen a bajillion times. Like, you meet him as a person already, who he is.
Yeah, I love the self-containedness of the films, and I love that they are on the ground in San Francisco, real people doing real things who just really fucking good at science. And this fella, Mr. Loveness, now I feel like they got fucked here. I feel like Kevin Feige and the powers that be told them, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to have this, you have to set up this, you have to... I feel like they were given a shocking
list. How much control they really have. Yeah.
But this loses all the charm. It takes it out of San Francisco. It's all on a giant fucking soundstage with CGI, everything. There's no tactileness in this film. Nothing in this film feels real. And I think the worst thing for me about this film is it came out so close to Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which is also set in space and cosmic and all of these things. I know this is in the quantum realm and not space, but let's be honest, it's fucking space. But Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is so tactile, and it has all these CGI characters and all of these aliens, but you can feel...
Looks
like a film. You can feel, you can touch, like, you know that they're picking up things.
There's shadows. God forbid we have shadows when they're CGI.
And, like, Rocket and Groot are so real. They feel like real people, whereas this just felt like a computer game and a bad computer game. And again, I feel like I say this a lot, but let's shout out the poor special effects workers at Marvel. Yes. This is not their fault. They are fucking worked to shreds.
Because the actual VFX was really impressive.
Yeah.
It's how it was integrated into the rest of the film.
And how much it was so over-relied on.
And it was just such a shame, because we're meant to be in this quantum realm, which is meant to be something far beyond our conception, and it just felt so uninspired. It was so... this should be really exciting and orange, like you were saying, like Guardians, like when it's so beautiful the way they do it, it just seemed like such a throwaway, like...
It felt like mud.
Oh, I guess it looks like this. Yes, it really
did. Like, do you remember...
It was so dark and, like... I don't know. Vibrant.
Were you ever a kid and you go to the fountain machines that, like, well, they have at Nando's now, but like at Pizza Hut or back in the day, and
you mix
all the drinks and it just comes out grey. That's what this film was like.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, actually. They've tried to do so much that it's just mixed all together into sludge, and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't hold any weight.
Yeah.
And like you say, this was on a sound stage, but it was a complete green screen sound stage. There was nothing there that they were working with. I kind of feel bad for them.
For everyone involved. It's just not good.
Ian McKellen's comment about working on The Hobbit and how he had a breakdown.
Yeah.
I can imagine it was similar.
Yeah, like, it's just... I feel bad for everyone involved. I'm sad that, you know, what I think could have been a really fun, silly trilogy was hijacked by setting up a new story, which obviously
that inevitably is now going to be canned anyway.
Yeah, which is, you know, no one involved's fault apart from the man himself, Jonathan Majors. You know, let's not beat up women. He's been found guilty of that now, so we can say it. You know, maybe we don't hurt women at all. Though, interestingly enough, one of our nominations here, Bill Murray, you know, he's always getting accused of hitting women and being inappropriate. We spoke about Lucy
and
Liu.
And that disappears into the wind, doesn't it?
Oh, it did, because everyone loves Bill Murray. You know, we spoke about Lucy Liu in our Shazam episode. Famously, Lucy Liu slapped him and hates him because he was really inappropriate to her.
On Charlie's Angels.
I sort of don't mind that he got this nom. I love Bill Murray as an actor. I greatly enjoy him in Wes Anderson films. But just because you're an old, rich, white guy doesn't mean that you get a free pass.
Well, unfortunately, it's kind of how everything seems to work these days, isn't it? So the thing, I won't dwell on this at all. The thing that annoys me the most about how people are talking about that situation related to the film and what was going to happen next is how they claim that Majors threw away his career. That's not what we should be focusing on.
No.
at all. No. And it seems to be a pattern because Mia Goth accusations came out recently and everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe she'd throw away a career like this. How about I can't believe she would stamp on someone's head?
Really? Yeah.
And
the thing with Jonathan Majors is when the allegations first came out, loads of people retweeted loads of really old tweets of people talking about a Yale drama graduate who was known for being abusive and who was suddenly making it really big in Hollywood, and all these people like, I can't name the person because I'll be sued, but I'm horrified how well they're making it because the room is at Yale were well known. They were all very open rumours.
It's the system that's protected people up to this point. So no, he hasn't thrown his career away.
He's always been like this.
He's gotten away with it for so long.
This wasn't one mistake. He didn't get really drunk one night and make a mistake. He's always been this way, according to people that knew him years ago.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of controversy sort of surrounding the film. There's a lot of people talking about what it would then mean next. Obviously, we've just spoken about how this film was very much used to set up Kang as a villain. And to be honest, that was pretty much the saving grace of the film at the time for me. I don't know if you felt the same.
It was probably the only interesting thing about the film.
And then obviously, given finding out what we knew about the actor, I was like resigned to the fact that, okay, that probably won't happen. If it does, it will probably be a bit of a patchwork of how do we fix this, or it will continue with him regardless. And I thought none of those options
are good.
Were something that was going to be what it was going to be. So I kind of resigned myself to the fact that that was a failed start.
And I think, so Jonathan Majors ended up being in Loki season 2, which was post allegations but pre verdict,
and also it had already all been shot.
And having watched Loki season 2, like there was he was whole episodes. Like, I actually, in fairness to the creators, they would, I don't know how they would have got around it. But Loki season 2 has kind of like a ambiguous ending where he sort of saves the world but starts new timelines or doesn't do so. Like, I hate time travel, and I didn't really care for either seasons of Loki, but so I do feel like they could maybe use that as a rewrite to be like, oh well, when Loki did that, it reset everything.
I do appreciate like need breeds innovation, so writing yourself out of a hole can be such an innovative way of coming up with a story. But when you're so far into something like Marvel, and I don't know how willing they are to take risks, that I can't see it be feeling like a really sort of, wow, I didn't think they were going to go this way. How exciting. This is much more interesting now than what could have been. I just feel like they're going to try and bury it under the carpet a little bit and kind of just like retcon it. And it's not going to feel, it's not going to, hey, it's not going to add from where we thought we were going to go. It's just going to remind us of what we could have had.
It's going to be the Simpsons meme. Kang died on the way back to his home planet.
Oh, yeah. And do you know why? I think it's just come to my mind why I think why that might happen. Because they'll try and rush it.
Yeah.
They'll try and keep to their timelines rather than taking it back to the drawing board. So I don't know how involved Ant-Man was in this phase, if there was any specific
I don't know if he was to be really involved later, or if they just thought this is a really great way of setting Kang up. To be honest, I didn't really ever understand why they decided to use Ant-Man as the vehicle for that.
Probably because they had no other ideas for him.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I think they were like, we want Ant-Man to feel more involved, because obviously as well, like, Marvel have just had, like, I don't want to feel sorry for a fucking multi-billion company, but truly, what a shit show of a few years. So they got, all their old actors were retiring, so then they set up Black Panther, and obviously Chadwick Boseman was a tragedy, him passing. Then they set up Brie Larson, and she was hated by people, and she's come out and said, not even that she doesn't want to do them anymore, but she's like, realistically, people don't like me as Captain Marvel, and they don't like Captain Marvel, so why would we keep making them? Then they had Tom Holland, but they've wasted Tom Holland, and also they only partly own Tom Holland, but he's already had, like, how many films? So I think he probably wants to go off and do different things. Ant-Man they've got, so I think Ant-Man's the only one left standing of the new Avengers. Like, I think he's literally the only lad.
What are they doing with Bruce Banner Hulk?
He'll always be about, but he will never be able to be his own film because of the rights issues with Paramount or someone.
Okay.
But so I think he'll always be around, but as a secondary. But realistically, of their new Avengers, Ant-Man kind of is the only man still standing. So I guess that's why
that's
they were like...
That's got a history anyway, because they've obviously set up Yelena from Black Widow.
Yeah, there's going to be like a new crew.
And like whoever Hayley... What's her name? Steinfeld.
Yeah, from Hawkeye.
From Hawkeye. So it's like... But they're going to like when they do spin-offs of like younger female.
Well, they're going to be the Young Avengers. They're setting up to be the Young Avengers, who will obviously then I guess become the real Avengers. But yeah, like they've kind of lost their sophomore team, so I guess that makes sense. They're probably looking at what films, and then no one Shang-Chi didn't seem to make that much of an impact.
And I quite liked it, to be honest.
No one liked the Eternals.
Which I did.
Oh, well,
it was a very different tone. It did, that was what I think people were hoping for when it came to auteur directors having their stamp on something, which actually relates to Ant-Man, because Edgar Wright was supposed to do the original Ant-Man. And people, I don't know how true this is, but people have surmised that it's because there was too much studio involvement and he couldn't make it an Edgar Wright film.
He has said that quite himself. Yeah.
So that felt like a Chloe Zhao film. And I think that's fair if people didn't like it, because it's her own style. Yeah. It's very different. It wasn't the best in my opinion, or everyone's opinion. But
I described it as too thin a pizza with too many toppings. And I felt like when you tried to pick it up, the middle fell out. It was stretched way too thin with way too much on top.
Yeah, I just liked the different change of pace. Mm-hmm. Marvel.
Apart from Barry Keoghan, I didn't like any of the characters.
Either way, no one liked it. It's not going to be something that they pick up again.
So yeah, I think they're looking at their deck of cards or their pictures on the wall, and they're like, well, fuck it, Ant-Man's the only guy we can depend upon, so we'll shove Kang into Ant-Man. And so suddenly you're losing all of the charm of the original ones. Catherine Newton, bless her, is running around on green screens and harnesses, and you get a film that's just really disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Shall we talk about the nominations for actor? So it was Michael Douglas and Bill Murray. We've mentioned Bill Murray before, so should we have a chat about him first? Although, to be honest, I kind of feel my opinions could be relayed to either.
So the Bill Murray one, it was kind of more of a cameo. Like, he was only kind of in one kind of scene / set piece.
Yeah.
Plays a smarmy guy who double-crosses him. I like that he was nominated, because it turns out he might not be a good guy, but I was a bit surprised to see the nomination. It wouldn't have been a performance that stuck out for me as a significantly bad one.
I don't even think it could be counted as a supporting actor role, to be honest.
No.
Like, say, it's pretty much a cameo.
Yeah. Weird one.
But I think... regardless of that and Michael Douglas's role, I think it's the same as what we touched upon in Shazam, which was feels like a lot of these nominations are coming for well-lauded and respected actors who are in a less than respectable film or a franchise that people kind of look down on for, you know, esteemed actors, where they don't... I feel like Michael Douglas doesn't have a huge amount to do. Bill Murray in the scene has a bit more, but he's not in it.
Michael Douglas definitely got a really big laugh out of me. Can't remember what for, but I know he...
Yeah, I feel like he kind of, like, has a little bit of fun with it, to be honest.
So I can't remember what the laugh was for, but I remember being in the cinema and he made, like, a pun or a joke or something. Can I remember being, oh, that was actually funny? Because so little of the film was funny. Don't remember what the joke was.
When he gets into the spaceship after that Bill Murray thing and he's trying to fly it...
He's very much
like a... what the fuck is going on here kind of vibe for the whole thing, which he should be, because where the fuck are they? Everyone is so like just takes this at face value and he's standing there going and I think people think that's bad, but I kind of feel like it's... you need a character like that, because otherwise it does become so... because the thing is, Michelle Pfeiffer's character, the whole thing is that she lived down there for 30 years. So it makes sense with her character that this is normal.
Yeah.
Right? And I liked that characterization. But I feel like the others, and I might be remembering this wrong, but I feel like the others kind of get straight into like that this is normal straight away. Whereas Michael Douglas seems a little bit more like the one on the outskirts with who doesn't really have much to do with the story and is kind of along for the ride, and he's a bit like...
So I think it's fine because Paul Rudd was down there for a bit as well, wasn't he?
Right. Oh, okay.
Like, doesn't he get trapped in there? between War and Endgame.
He does, but I don't think he goes as far down as like where there's civilization or anything.
No, he doesn't meet anyone down there, I don't think. And also, like, Hope and Cassie are just like, oh, cool, no problem. And also just really given nothing to do as female characters.
Well, this is it. This is why my point about Michael Douglas is that none of them really have a huge amount to do other than Paul Rudd and Michelle Pfeiffer in terms of their characters in relation to the story and moving the plot forward. The others are kind of just like they're supporting and they have little moments and stuff. Hank is kind of there as the comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you can call him comic relief, yeah. Because there's not really much comedy. And I wonder if people kind of see that as a little bit of like a, like an Al Pacino and Jack and Jill kind of
scenario, I was just looking up there, so because I was like, I wonder, he doesn't seem too different from the role he plays in the first two to me, really. He's a bit more comedic, but like I thought he was kind of doing what he's been doing as Hank Pym for two previous movies.
Right.
So I wanted to see if he had been nominated as Hank Pym before. He has not, but he has been nominated once before for a Razzie Award. In 1993, he got a double Worst Actor nomination for a film called Shining Through, which I've never heard of, but also Basic Instinct.
I've not seen it, but
I watched it at Christmas. I don't know how that... Basic Instinct is like quite a well-liked film. I thought he was quite good in it. Surprised by that.
Maybe it's more of a cult following after...
Yeah, after the fact. Launch. It was very silly, but fun.
I do think that this Michael Douglas one is that he's kind of relegated to the sidelines in this one a bit more.
Yeah, he is.
I feel like he has this sort of a bit more of an authoritative role in the first two as the scientist and as Hope's dad and that relationship with Scott, whereas I kind of feel like he's like the bumbling father-in-law in this a little bit more.
And maybe he's given some of his stuff to Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's pretty much what happened, is that usually you'd have the man doing that stuff, and then the woman would be like the eye candy that goes along with him, and he's in what they would describe as reduced to that role, and therefore they think that it's bad.
Yeah.
But I can't say I remember it in super amounts of detail.
No.
So that just goes to show, was it really the worst if I can barely remember it?
No. Worst director. I feel bad for Peyton Reed, but I can't deny it is not a well-made film, and direction has to be part of that. I think the script, I would have given it screenplay over director, but I can't disagree that it doesn't look great, it doesn't feel great, the pacing isn't good, the performances aren't great. A lot of that has to come down to the director. The director is the person in charge on that set. So.
Otherwise, what is their role, really? Yeah. Because everyone's doing their own stuff. They have the responsibility to deliver. But if they're at the end of the day, that last bit is how it all comes together.
Yeah. I don't know if he was handed a poison chalice or what, but...
Oh, this is it as well, isn't it?
I can't.
Because how do we know how much his hands were tied?
Yeah.
But the that is regardless is the director's role, and you never know. Like, I think what we try and figure out is if it had been in someone else's hands, despite all of that, could they have got something a bit better out of it?
I think the only person I think could have done a better job, like that I would have trusted to do this well, would have been James Gunn, just because of the success of the Guardians films. But then also, he has always put his foot down that those films belong to him, and like he worked on their sequences in Infinity War and Endgame for that, and you can feel that. And even he was fucked over with what they did to Gamora in those films. You know, he said that changed what he had planned for the final film, so he's been suffered from it too. But I just think he has a much better grip on dealing with the sci-fi elements that I think when you look at Peyton Reed's filmography. He's not a sci-fi man. And I think that's why I especially love the first one, because the first one doesn't feel like sci-fi. It feels like a comedy with sci-fi elements, whereas this is pure sci-fi, and I think he might have been out of his depth.
Yeah. Because whilst he'd done the previous two, and I think it goes to show, like, Paul Rudd was far from the worst thing in this. It's like the elements you're pulling through from where Ant-Man worked weren't the things we didn't like.
It's all the new stuff.
Where it's gone to now, But I just want to go back to the writer, because the fact that he hasn't got any other credits, I don't understand how someone could come in and write, be given the job to write something of this scale and magnitude.
I'd say he must have some TV credits. So let me check, because okay. I was looking at Letterboxd.
We were looking at, yeah, Letterboxd.
So, yes, he... he was a writer on Rick and Morty for a couple of years.
Okay, so right, okay. I feel like that gives him enough kudos. But the comedy did not come through, if that's the case.
He's actually had a very strange... So he wrote... he's also done some comic work with them. So he wrote on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Wrote for Jimmy Kimmel.
And then he did a lot of Emmy and Academy stuff.
On his acting in The Office.
And then he did some Rick and Morty. But, yeah, then he just randomly got hired to do this.
Though he's from The Onion.
He's been replaced. Whether Kang Dynasty is happening or not, he will not be writing it. He was replaced.
So he's kind of come through as a bit of a comic writer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's so bizarre, because if you gave me that background, I'd be like, oh yeah, sure, this is definitely something that would be in his wheelhouse. But it completely with that.
Obviously, he's got a decent enough amount of writing credits, but none of them are movies. Would you give a feature length movie that's tying together all of these elements to this guy? I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, if you're trying that's to true. Set up if it was.
Got Joss Whedon. I know Joss Whedon hadn't done too many films, but he had, and Joss Whedon, bad guy.
Successful long-form TV shows.
Long-form TV show. He also was a well-renowned script doctor, like, as his work on Toy
and
Story.
A producer as well.
And, yeah. So, like, his accolades were far, and the reason they wanted a TV guy for the Avengers was because of the ensembleness. It's why they also got the Russo brothers to do the other ones, because of their work on Community.
Arrested Development and Community. Yeah,
whereas this guy, most of his TV work has been monologue stuff. Like, it's been chat shows and award shows, so I don't know.
That doesn't translate.
Yeah, it's an odd little gamble
and with
there.
Things like Rick and Morty, whilst he's only written 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And that will be... all of these are like groups of writers coming up with things that work, but they stick and they work. It might not necessarily have been him that's writing the story.
Yeah.
And you're right. Going from writing jokes, and I'm trying not to reduce them to that, but you're right. It's like the monologues, being in part of the writer's room, great. But to write a whole screenplay, which is something that, in a way, it's almost as if this film was trying to be too funny, we'd be like, what he does. But it's not.
No.
So it's almost as if he's tried to completely pivot.
Yeah.
And actually what we needed was a bit more of what he probably does best.
Yeah. But, you know, he didn't get a nomination, weirdly enough. Bizarre to me. Yeah. I definitely think it should have been up there. But I've actually, apart from Shazam... I've not watched yet any of the other worst screenplay nominees, so maybe I will change my mind after I've seen them. Maybe I will.
So Expendables, Exorcist,
Winnie the Pooh, Shazam, and Indiana Jones.
Right, I've seen Indiana Jones, but I haven't seen it.
And again, so this is the only. Oh no, this didn't get a worst picture nom either.
This was just worst sequel.
Yeah, worst sequel. So yeah. I didn't think I. It's in the bottom third of my year as well.
It was just behind Shazam 2 for me and mine.
Yeah, I think there was a few in the middle.
You, all the rest that are after it pretty much are the shitty Christmas films I watch every year. The new streaming releases, other than one Razzie nomination, which was my absolute worst of the year, and I'm not going to reveal which one it is. But we'll talk about that on that episode.
Interesting. I gave this 72 out of 91 films. So pretty low there.
I was like, do you do them out of 100? That's...
I saw 91 new releases.
I thought you meant like on a scale, like Metacritic. I think, mine would have been... So mine would have been in the bottom 10. It's number 10 on the bottom. Yeah, and in that, I do think that, and I think that's why it should be on the sequel and not worst picture, because it is because it's an Ant-Man sequel.
Yeah, and that makes sense, and it is a bad sequel. It's a very bad sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sad for Peyton Reed, confused for Michael Douglas. Bill Murray, well, don't really care too much, and it deserves prequel, remake, ripoff, or sequel.
Yep.
And yeah. Don't hit women. Anything else?
Please.
I mean, I don't feel like that needs a please, Daisy. I feel like that should just be a statement. Please no, implies right. a choice. It's not a choice. Let's just not
it's
hit
not a
them.
Choice. Let's just not do that. Careers or otherwise. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and we hope you can join us for another mini episode as we tackle another Razzie-nominated film on our road to Razzies 2024.